Hey guys, it's Andrew here. Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by Adam Lieb of Astro House, who's the maker and, of course, seller of the FreeWrite Traveler, which is a, if you imagine, kind of a Kindle device that was a laptop. So it had the screen of a Kindle, but the keyboard of a laptop, and was very kind of compact like a Chromebook. That's kind of what it would look like if you have to, you know, just in your mind's eye, with an amazing, beautiful keyboard on there. And I was talking to ECF Live because he's a member of our private community, and just looking at this device, learning about it, and was struck by how complex it was. When I think about the members in our forum and just e-commerce, independent e-commerce sellers I know, generally they're not producing consumer electronics, or if they are, they're not very complicated ones. And Adam did do this, and I thought it'd be really interesting to have him on and just understand what is involved with doing that, because I had a hunch, and I was right, that it was an unholy amount of work. So is it worth it? Like, if you have an idea to try to create a consumer electronic good, is it worth it? Can you actually break into a market? Is it something that if you don't have an electrical engineering degree and have spent 10 years at Intel, is it something you can pull off? Or are you going to subject yourself to months, if not years, of agony, sunk costs, and heartburn? So that's what we talk about. Interesting. We dive into like chip manufacturing, his thoughts on Apple and what he thinks about when he sees like an iPhone, and just that whole process. So if you're thinking about building, if you've ever thought about building one, hopefully this is interesting. But even if not, I think the conversation will give you some insights and maybe some new appreciations for the devices, the likes of which, you know, the smartphones that we carry around every day. So I hope you enjoy it. Before we jump in, though, a big thank you to our friends at Klaviyo, powering the email marketing engines of over 50,000 independent e-commerce store owners. And it's it's a busy month among busy e-commerce years. It's probably going to be the biggest e-commerce season, holiday season in history. And Klaviyo is where you want to be if you want to be able to get in front of your customers with email, SMS, custom landing pages, and more. And their superpower is really their ability to have hyper-targeted segmenting and being able to identify what customers have purchased, what haven't, what items they've purchased, you know, who your most loyal customers are. They have a very cool lifetime value feature that you could segment by. And you're able to target more effectively than anyone else with their software, which ultimately means you make more money with your emails. So if you're using them, you know how good they are. If you're not, get started with them for free, and you can learn more and get started for a free trial at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. All right, let's go ahead and jump into my discussion with Adam. Adam, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Andrew. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. So what is Astro House? I think you pronounce it like the German style, I'm guessing. And what is that, and what do you guys sell? And how do you pronounce it? Because obviously I didn't do my research here.
So I call it Astro House. I'm not German, so I'm just going to say it in an anglicized way. But Astro House is our company. I founded it with my co-founder, Patrick Paul, and I back in 2014. And we really founded the company around our first product, which was a sort of a breakout hit that we launched on Kickstarter, which we never really intended to be a big Kickstarter, but it was, it blew us all away. We raised $200,000 in the first 20 hours and realized that we had something on our hands. So we created Astro House as a way to, you know, create a company around this first product. Originally it was called Hemingwrite. Now it's called FreeWrite. So it's called the FreeWrite Smart Typewriter.
Very cool. And so for people that I kind of described at the top a little bit, but for people who haven't seen it, it's the way I thought about it was kind of like a Kindle for a laptop. Like if for writers, it's got the e-ink display, very minimal. It's got a great keyboard on it, and it's focused solely on writing with, you know, zero distractions for all the other stuff. Is that a fair, in a nutshell, assessment, or anything I should add to that, or you should add to that?
So we call it a distraction-free writing tool. We've sort of morphed our marketing and started allowing to call it a smart typewriter, which I never really loved because it's not really a typewriter. You know, a typewriter is this thing that clicks and clacks and has mechanical arms, typically like whacking the page. So this thing is really, it's its own modern invention. But the idea is that we wanted to give writers a distraction-free environment, but also still have the benefits of having digital documents. So it has an e-ink screen, which is awesome. It's the same screen that's in a Kindle. You can use it outside. It's super, super low, low power. It has a really great mechanical keyboard, which has Cherry MX mechanical keyboard key switches with Cherry MX Browns for those mechanical keyboard snobs out there. And the cool thing about it is that it not only has like this very simple software environment that has no distractions, meaning no email, no notifications, no browser, no social media, but it also syncs up to the cloud. So it has Wi-Fi built in. And the idea is that you do your drafting on this device and then everything is synced up to Dropbox, Google Drive, or Evernote. And then you can edit it later on your computer.
One of the things I'm really excited to talk to you about is to understand how you came up with, not how you came up with the design for it, but how you manufactured this product, because we'll link up to it in the show notes and I encourage you to go check out the FreeWrite Traveler, because it's a very cool looking product, but it's also a very sophisticated product. It's not just a mechanical keyboard like we're talking about, but the screen, it's a modern electronic, full-on electronic device. And when I think about the people in our community, there aren't a lot of them that sell custom made from scratch electronic devices, maybe reselling. Maybe they have, you know, small little electronic pieces that have been pre-made and that they either private label or work into something of their own. But a from the ground up custom consumer electronics good, there's not a lot of us that sell that. And I think I'm guessing the reason is, at least what I'm guessing coming into this discussion is, I think about that and I think, wow, well, consumer electronics, A, they're complicated. B, you can really only do them at scale, potentially. Again, these are all preconceived notions. C, they're, you know, the margins are going to be small on electronics. And so anyway, I want to talk to you about specifically what's the process like for you to design it and manufacture it and bring it to market. So I'd love to hear about that. So maybe even before we dive into the nitty-gritty step-by-step process, all of those things I mentioned, are those fair stereotypes, or am I just kind of someone who is not looking in the right places and kind of maybe those are misconceptions?
I think they're fair stereotypes, but I think if you're going to make an electronic product, you're going to want to try very hard so that you don't fall into those traps. And, you know, part of that is not making a product where you're going to be competing on price or on features. Those things are near impossible for a small company to do. You have to do something innovative, which shouldn't be such a crazy idea, but that's really how you have to come into anything. I mean, it's not just electronics. You know, if you need to, I mean, anything that you want to, you know, dive into, you have to come up with something innovative. And electronics, I mean, there's new things that are happening all the time. And I think you just have to be very methodical in how you approach it. To answer your question, I can go through a little bit of the process of what it takes. I've now, having launched, designed, created, shipped two major custom consumer electronic products, the first one being our original FreeWrite and the second one now being our FreeWrite Traveler that we just started shipping in October. Those products, those are on the pretty extreme end of the scale in terms of complicated ness. Is that a word? Complications. Let's run with it. So because they're basically, I mean, Traveler is a laptop. It's not like kind of a laptop. It is a laptop, and it has its own embedded Linux distribution that's customized. It has, you know, it has peripherals built in, including flash storage and, you know, DDR3, LPDDR3 RAM. And it has, you know, a USB type C port that works in both downstream and upstream. And it has a display and a very custom, you know, special display using e-ink. And so there's all of those things that go into making a laptop, go into making something like the FreeWrite Traveler. Now, it's a little bit easier because it's a low power device. And again, like, we weren't competing on speed, for example. So when you're not competing for speed, there's a lot of different considerations that you can make.
So can I interrupt you really quickly? So when you first, you have the idea for this, and it's a great idea. What is it? What's the first, the very first, who did you go to with this idea first to actually have it, you know, mocked up? When I think about, if you're designing a soft good thing, you could probably just start working with a factory and send them some drawings and say, here you go, send me a pre-production sample. You can get it. You can say, this is right, this is wrong. Send me another one. Straightforward. If you're working with something that's maybe a little bit more, you know, CNC machine style, maybe you can hire somebody who knows CAD really well and they can build a model for you and you can kind of take it from there and maybe use a machine shop to get to the mold station or whatever, the mold level of the process, if those are necessary. When you're doing a confluent computer with a custom case and everything you mentioned, who do you have one person that you go to that you sit down and say, here's what we want to do. Can you be our architect of this? Do you have to try to manage a portfolio of a circuit board designer? And then you have to chat with, you know, four different factories for different parts. Who's your first stop on this process once you have the concept?
Unfortunately, it's the guy in the mirror. I really acted as that product manager, for lack of a better term, or engineering project manager for both of the products, which meant that I had to manage all of the different skill sets and engineering that went into making the overall product. And so there's a lot that goes into it. And that is what makes it complicated, because there's, you know, creating the schematic, there's PCB design, there's a lot of different factories involved, there's mechanical design, there's, you know, certifications and RF considerations. So there's a lot of different elements that go into it. But if you know, it's just like any other really complicated project, you separate it into focus areas. And so the way that we do it is we really focus, first of all, well, I don't know. Should I step through the entire process? I'll try to be succinct about it.
Well, yeah, maybe starting with those high ones that you mentioned. If you could maybe give maybe a one or two sentence on all those. So schematic, is that the schematic for the actual circuit board that you're going to have to put into this thing?
Correct. So and every product's a little bit different. I mean, our product uses a microprocessor, which is the type of processor that you would use in a regular computer. And what that also means, though, is that there's, like I said before, there's peripheral things. So what we did for both projects is we worked with an engineering contracting firm that managed the electronics and our firmware, parts of the firmware, I should say. And we worked very closely with them to build out the specification for the product. And they would help us and we'd help them. First, you know, doing part selection, which is a huge part of it that sort of sometimes gets overlooked, but choosing the parts, meaning like we're going to use this processor and we're going to use this type of memory and this type of power management controller and all these different parts. And then you stitch them together, you create a PCB. And
what's a PCB? A schematic, I understand. What's a PCB?
Printed circuit board. So that's the actual computer.
It's the manifestation of the schematic.
Exactly. And so the schematic is the written out, you know, all the different virtual wires, right? You have this chip and it's connected with these wires going to this chip that are connected to these wires that go to the switch, that go to the LED and all that stuff. And then all those parts have to then be placed onto a physical layout that turns into the circuit board. And so that circuit board with the bill of materials, the BOM, then needs to get prototyped. And so we work with factories in China that do our prototyping, and eventually we'll get the boards back and we turn them on for the first time. And you know what they say in the hardware world is you hope that you don't let out any of the magic smoke, because there's magic smoke inside and that's what keeps everything running. So if you burn something, basically you let the magic smoke out and then it's broken. So that's the dumb joke internally. So you plug it in for the first time, you hook up a battery or a power supply and hope there's no magic smoke. You try to connect this display, you connect the serial port, whatever. You're talking to the board and trying to get it to, you know, basically respond to some kind of command that you're giving it over the serial port. That's the electronics process. And then sort of separately, you're working to build up the mechanical design. And so really there's two sort of major focus areas. There's the mechanical design and then the electrical design.
Got it. And so with the, just to kind of recap a little bit, you've got, first step was you worked with a US firm or North American firm, engineering firm, to say, here's the end product that we need. Help us come up with the concept for the electronics. They put together the schematic. They helped you pick all the components from the electronic front, and they did that schematic. You took that schematic, you took all the list of components that you chatted with the engineering firm about. You went to you found a factory in China and said, hey, we've got the schematic, i.e. the map for our circuit board. Here's all the components we want to use in this product. Can you go ahead and create the circuit board, manufacture it for us so that we can hook up all of the keyboard, the screen, all this kind of stuff, and just test it. This is all outside of a case or anything. It's just maybe even on a, just a, you know, a workbench, I'll hook it up. And then they manufactured that for you and sent that to you. Am I thinking about that right?
Yeah, but it wasn't a US firm though. We worked with a firm in France, and actually the previous, for FreeRite, we worked with a firm in Serbia. So we work with engineers across the world, and that's just normal.
What kind of engineer, if someone was thinking about going down this path, what would you even call, is that just an electrical engineering firm that you'd try to find? And if so, where would one go to try to find, you know, someone to hire for something like this? I think most people would have zero idea.
Well, the first thing is I wouldn't recommend to do this to anyone. So,
well, let's wrap her up right there. This has been good, man.
If you have to think about it, the answer is no. And also, I think it's important to realize, like, my background, I studied mechanical engineering and product design. And so my background was very important to this project. My co-founder's background is he's a software developer. That background is extremely important. And at no point do we work with any of these contractors and just say, like, hey, here's this. And they come back with something that's ready. And we just, you know, take that, you know, take the engineering work and then give it to the factory and say, oh, here, make this thing. And then they send it back and everything's perfect. Like, that couldn't be farther from how it actually works in practice. I mean, they're very, very tight conversations and back and forth and making sure that everything is makeable. I mean, that there's a lot that goes into making sure everything is actually, one, first of all, purchasable. And then the second thing, makeable.
Hey guys, Andrew here with a quick aside. A little flashback. I think I mentioned this at the top. I met Adam at an event that we did for our community back in San Antonio earlier in 2020, before everything blew up, before the world exploded, more or less. And I mentioned that because, you know, we had 225 interesting, hardworking e-commerce entrepreneurs in one place. And it was really cool. We've done this, I think this is our fifth or sixth event. And I should probably know that, one of those two. But it's amazing the magic that happens when you get all these like-minded people together with something, with a focus and a niche focus like e-commerce. And while you can't do that every day, you can't do that right now, definitely with COVID, you can join that amazing group of people inside the community we have built here at E-Commerce Fuel. It's over 1,000 seven and eight figure e-commerce store owners, people that are in the trenches, that are building stuff like Adam is building, that are running marketing campaigns inside of, you know, Klaviyo, talking about, you know, the nitty-gritty of SEO and payment processing and tariffs and shipping, and do agencies actually, like, can you actually depend on agencies? Should you bring everything in-house? How do you deal with HR issues? All these things that no one else except for you can talk to. They're all banging around in your head at night as you sleep, for good and for bad. Because let's face it, running a business is kind of an 18-hour job, even when you're not doing it. It's in your brain. But these are people you can talk to and that get you and that actually have relevant experience they can share, because a lot of them have been exactly where you are. So it's a fun group of people. It's a group of people that can add a lot of value, and you can add a lot of value too. So if that sounds interesting, come join our group, learn more, and apply to join the ranks at ecommercefuel.com. All right, back to my discussion with Adam. So what you're saying is my first two questions should have been, A, do you have advanced degrees in this type of thing? And two, if you do not, would you, you know, recommend people dive into it? It's probably where we should have started. So I mean, yeah, I mean, would you, I think I know the answer already, but if somebody has a great idea for something and they don't have that mechanical engineering background or electrical engineering background, is this something you think that, you know, with some hustle and some self-education, a smart person can dive into without, you know, just absolutely, you know, pulling their hair out, be able to figure out? Or is it somewhere where you need either yourself or a co-founder to really be steeped in this kind of stuff?
I know of people that have built hardware projects that don't have a engineering background, and I'm extremely impressed with them because it's so hard. But that's also what I think, you have to have that engineering expertise somewhere. And, you know, that's where people really come up to this phrase, which is hardware is hard, because it's hard because there's a lot of engineering and work that goes into it, and there's not a lot of room for error. So you end up with a system that has an infinite number of variables. And when you aren't accounting for those variables along the way, there's just so many places where things can break down. And there's a lot of hard lessons. And this is kind of an interesting thing that I learned that I'll share in that, you know, when I came into this, the first project, the original FreeWrite, I had no background in making consumer electronics. So I won't say that it's impossible. Clearly it's possible to make, you know, usher this project into reality. And we certainly relied on our engineering, you know, contacts and resources. But there's things that you learn along the way that are very counterintuitive. And for example, I think maybe you'd think, which I thought, the mechanical components that were all custom, like custom molded plastic housings and custom machined, you know, metal parts and custom screws and all of these kinds of custom things, you would have thought, I thought that those would be the difficult parts. Turns out that it's actually the off-the-shelf electronic components that are the most annoying part of manufacturing stuff.
Why?
Because the lead times are so insane. We just placed a PO for our second batch of travelers, which is really exciting. And two of our parts are coming back with over 20-week lead times. So how do you, and every time that happens, and it's happened every time we make a batch, how do you manage that? How do you manage when there's 5-month lead times? And that's just the part lead time. Then you have to add on the actual assembly and shipping. So that's like another, call it 6 weeks, best case. That's just crazy.
So it's the biggest problem is you have so many components for your average consumer electronic that any 3 or 4 of them or one of them that isn't immediately available holds up the entire project.
That's exactly right. And when you make a product, it can't, the line can't start until you have 100% of the components ready. They don't start it with 99% and just say, oh, well, we'll make most of it. Like they just don't, it, not only would you not have a finished product, but they won't even start up the line if they don't have all of the components on the floor ready to go. And so that those are the kinds of things that are really tough lessons. And it's not always that bad. And I have a lot of faith in my factory. And this is one of the huge benefits of working with a really good factory is that they really work their channels to find those components. And yeah, there's usually some kind of upcharge to, you know, get them on the spot market or whatever it is, or from a broker. But those are the kinds of crazy things that you have to deal with when building consumer electronics. And then you hear like, oh, well, all the mobile phones that are, you know, taking over the market, well, they're eating up the entire capacitor supply in the entire world. And it's like, what? Like, how does anything get done? How does anything get made? It's crazy.
So I think I remember when the iPhone originally came out, like 2007, you'll appreciate this because you get a finance background. I was working as a grunt at an investment bank, and I had some friends in the press in our small little town in Montana, 50,000 people, that surprisingly had this finance company. And one of them came to me, asked me for a quote on it. And I said, the iPhone is the most mouth-watering device I have ever seen. And they printed this, and my managing director came in after reading the paper in the morning. And he said, you can give quotes to the paper as much as you want. But next time you give them some kind of like ridiculous quote like this, don't tell them you work for our firm, okay? And he walked out of my office. But I still stand by this, you know, I mean, at the time, and even still, like the iPhone then was revolutionary. It's still amazing. And I think we get, you know, we kind of get used to it. It's part of daily life. And I think sometimes you take for granted how much technology goes into that. When you see a modern phone or the phone you pull out every day, like having gone through this process, does it just blow your mind that they're, you know, able to do this, not even just do this, but a company like Apple is able to crank out a new one of these almost, you know, every year?
Well, before I sound like a complete Apple total fanboy, let me just say, I never owned an Apple product, including an iPod, until an iPhone 6. So this was really only a few years ago that I got my first Apple product of any type. And now, every time I see the iPhone, I am just, and even their MacBooks as well. And now with this new M1 chip that they released, it's just insane how far ahead they are in terms of hardware and software that they are than anyone else. And it's just, it's really not even close. And it's so ridiculous because you think of Samsung and they're these they're also just as big or big enough, right? And it's just not even close. And Samsung has been making chips for years. And it's like, why? I don't know. Anyway, yes, it's absolutely incredible. What the iPhone itself is one of the most amazing pieces of technology a consumer will ever experience. Maybe even that ever exists. It's unbelievable what they've been able to cram into that and how good it is. It's really incredible.
What is it that impresses you most about it? Is it just how everything fits together? Is it just the design, the speed at which they have to iterate? Having gone through the process and having a full appreciation for it, what do you think is so impressive?
Well, the rate of change is very impressive. Them releasing a yearly release cycle is very challenging. I don't care how big you are. That's really challenging. And they have to make so many phones, so many. And so for them, not only are they releasing new technologies, you know, maybe every 2 years, let's say, because sort of the every other year, it's more of like an incremental improvement. So like every 2 years or some significant technology improvement. But even just to do that, like they have to not only prove that technology, but then they also have to have a supply chain that can support building, I don't know, 100 million phones. Is just so mind-blowing how they could do that.
Well, especially after you said that just even one or two of those things that are held up, it holds the whole train up at the station, right?
Exactly. Well, it's companies like Apple that are screwing it for the rest of us because they eat the entire supply chain for all of these components.
you can't compete with Apple for priority here? That's shocking.
No, I can't.
that's crazy. Well, I think, you know, it's funny how sometimes these discussions evolve, and got into it originally thinking about walking through some of those steps and kind of really diving into those. And we did to some degree, but I think that the bigger takeaway is, A, it's incredibly complex. There's a lot of minefields there, and you can produce some incredible things about it, but it's an incredibly involved process. And I think maybe kind of we're starting to run out of time here, but I kind of asked you this earlier, but if somebody has a great idea for a consumer electronic, you mentioned differentiated, of course, being important, so it's not a commodity issue. But what would you say to someone who is, you know, doesn't have an engineering degree, but and has a differentiated idea and wants to maybe tackle this, like having gone through it, would you steer them away from it? Or would you say, just know what you're getting in for, but go for it?
Yeah, I mean, I would always tell someone to go for it. That's my answer about everything. So I think, look, if you're willing to do some of the legwork, if you don't want to get your hands dirty, then I don't think you really have business doing anything. And you know, I think, like, get your hands dirty. I mean, the great thing about 2020 is that nothing has been ever so accessible, including consumer electronics. I mean, the tools and components and the hardware and the software, everything that exists today is so much better. Just even from a development standpoint, it's so much better and more accessible than it's ever been. And so it's so easy to pick up a Raspberry Pi, which is just, you know, a simple Linux computer. It's so easy to pick up an Arduino or one of these other systems out there and do some hacking. And so I would 100% encourage anybody that has an idea to try it out. And no, you don't need to be an engineer. You don't need to go to college for engineering. You don't have to do anything other than give it a shot and go for it. And I think, like I said, I would never want to be the person that discourages, you know, someone from working on their idea. They should definitely do it. I think, you know, still at the hardest part is selling it and then making it. So, you know, put it out there, see if anybody cares before you actually, you know, spend the hundreds of thousands or millions to get it into fruition.
So now that you have an exponentially greater appreciation for consumer electronics, go check out the Free Rider Travel, right? Am I saying that right? The Free Rider Traveler, I'm sorry.
Free Rider Traveler, yep.
Yeah, and where can people check this out?
Yeah, so our website is getfreeride.com, and we have both our original Free Rider and the new Free Rider Traveler on that site and some accessories, and you can see what we've made.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, man, they're beautiful products. I mean, just it doesn't look like a Chromebook would, right? Like you might think like a small laptop thing that you can just write on. It doesn't look like just a Chromebook. It's got its own unique style. It's much smaller, sleeker, like we talked about, the super cool keyboard. So yeah, well done on making a really impressive product, and especially given everything I know now, you know, now 30 minutes into this on how difficult it was.
Yeah, thank you. And I would just encourage, like, you know, for this audience, maybe it seems crazy, but, you know, maybe I'll, if do we have a minute?
Oh, yeah.
We're good. I think it's important to understand, like, the why of this product, because it actually speaks to a more broader problem. I mean, these products are both very, very focused, sorry for the pun, they're very focused on writers. And so these are folks that want to write something like 500, 1,000, 10,000, they want to write a book. So for them, what is the most important thing is actually to stay focused and do their writing. And so for them, what I found is having talked to writers now for the last 5 years, even coming at this as a non-writer, what I found is that every writer has some method to stay focused. And that was pretty interesting to me. And we didn't talk so much about the origin of this product, but it actually came from distraction-free writing software. And so this is something that's quite pervasive in terms of a lot of modern authors are using either distraction-free software. A lot of writers even still write things longhand, which really blew my mind. And so there's all these interesting stories of folks like J.K. Rowling writing longhand, George R.R. Martin writing Game of Thrones on a WordStar machine with DOS. I mean, these are modern people writing with 20, 30-year-old computers. And they're writing for the specific purpose of not having distraction, not only just not having other software, but not having notifications, not having the pull or the temptation to go on YouTube to do quote-unquote research. And so we created these products for the modern writer that really, really cares about their writing process and wants to stay focused. And so that's really why these things exist. So, you know, because I know a lot of people in the tech world just think it's totally insane. But the thing that's really interesting is how much people have, in the last 5 years, come much more in tune with how much they are distracted and how much things like social media or just, you know, playing on their phone all the time is really, you know, causing them to you know, lose their flow and sort of, you know, not be inspired. And so these products are really designed for a more conscious person to really just stay focused and get their writing done. So I didn't want to forget actually talking about like why these things exist. Building consumer electronics is awesome and fun. And I think the reason truly that we've been able to keep doing this is because they provide a lot of value to our customers. And no, they may not be for everybody, and that's totally fine. But for our writers, we have something like 120 million words have been written on the original FreeWrite. And so, you know, people really do care about these things. And I think if you're going to make a consumer electronic product or any product of any kind, I mean, you have to figure out a way to give value to your customers. And that's truly the way to, you know, charge a good price. And so you're not, you know, it's not a race to the bottom. Like if you're going to make TVs or something, that is just a race to the bottom and you'll never compete. So there is definitely a market for niche consumer electronics that add a lot of value to the customer.
So check it out, getfreewrite.com. Adam, are you up for doing a quick lightning round here before we wrap it up?
Let's do it.
So let's talk about writing. What is the favorite thing that you have ever written?
I don't know if I've liked anything I've ever written.
Well, I got this product for you. You should check it out. It'll help you really, really be able to, you know, hunker down.
I wrote a little blog post, one of my last blog posts about a really simple sleep system. And I don't think it's the best piece of writing, but I'm glad that I finally wrote it down because I talked to so many people about sleeping, and it's just, I don't know, a side hobby passion of mine, just how to fall asleep and how to stay asleep. So I wrote a little blog post. This is on adamleap.com if anyone's checked it out, but it's about my little mini sleep system.
We will link up to that blog post in the show notes. The most effective marketing strategy for you in the last 6 months?
Raising my prices.
Really?
Well, yeah. And the marketing strategy is the 2 weeks leading up to raising the price.
Ah, interesting. I'm sure sales exploded, obviously. But what I'm also curious about is, did sales drop off that much? How much did you raise prices by, and how much did sales drop off by after the fact?
So this is for the FreeWrite Traveler. We had been selling at $389 and we raised it to $429. We did a huge push for 2 to 3 weeks prior to raising the prices. And we told people like, we're going to raise prices. Yeah, it was hugely effective. And so I think for us, we've used that technique quite a lot. especially because we've had such long delays from announcing to finally shipping. And one of the techniques that I've used is we sort of slowly increase prices. And what that does is it gives us something to talk about and also sort of locks people in when they have earlier pre-sales. Because, you know, if it's been a long time, there's going to be some people that want to cancel. But, you know, one of the things that we can say if they want to cancel is like, oh, well, you locked in this price that's like $20 or $30 less than what it is now. And if you give it up, like, then it's never going to go back to that price again. And so that's actually been a very effective way for us to kind of continue marketing over these year, now 2 year, you know, pre-sale efforts.
What's the last thing you apologized for that you're willing to talk about?
I don't know. I don't know if I have a good one for that. I think like not listening to my team as much. I had to apologize and, you know, say that I really needed to probably listen a little bit better.
What's one of your life goals that's at least 10 years in the horizon? Probably can't hit it in 10 years, but you're still gunning for it at some point.
I don't know what the time frame is, but one of my sort of life goals is I want to get something I designed into MoMA.
Oh, cool. That's a cool goal. Museum of Modern Art, right? That's
what you're talking about? Yes, the Museum of Modern Art. One of my favorite museums and a place that is really incredible in New York and obviously has a huge place in the art world and modern art. So yeah, it's a dream.
What's the top quality you look for in people you voluntarily spend time with and especially become friends with?
The thing that I keep coming back to is thoughtfulness. And I think sometimes I used to think of that word just sort of very surface level, but even if I just think of what, you know, break it up, it's like full of thoughts. I think that's like someone that's thoughtful has thought about the things around them and what they're doing and have self-awareness. And I think that really sort of encompasses the kind of person that I enjoy spending time with.
And then finally, who's the most interesting person you've met being a part of the e-commerce fuel community?
Well, I was at the conference in San Antonio and I met Ben Katzman, who I really enjoyed hanging out with. And speaking of thoughtful, I think super thoughtful guy and just super interesting. He has a great story and his store, it's just fascinating. So I barraged him with a huge load of questions and just loved hearing about, you know, all the different things that he's into in Bali and with his store. So Ben Katzman.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've been trying to get him on the podcast for a little bit. So if you see him, give him the nudge. Be like, hey, you should go on that show and tell the story.
I definitely will. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Adam, kudos on making a great product. Thank you for coming on and sharing and kind of taking us down the consumer electronics rabbit hole and just for, batting these ideas around and kind of giving people a view into that world. It's really interesting. So appreciate your time and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the eCommerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.